Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. This is Terry Patton. I'm the creator and host of this series, and for any of those of you who don't already know me, I'm also the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice and the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber. I convened this series to invigorate a deeper public dialogue around what's taking place right now at the leading edge of consciousness and culture by asking one critical question from many different perspectives. How can higher consciousness enable human beings to rise to meet the unique challenges of this amazing time we live in, of unsustainable imbalance, global crisis, but also amazing opening and opportunity? So this is part of a series of conversations on this topic that I've been conducting for several years with many of today's leading thought leaders and spiritual teachers, which you can access by registering at beyondawakeningseries.com. Today, I'm really delighted to be joined by Sarah Beek, and we'll continue that discussion in a conversation that we're titling, Only Partnering with Our Divine Soul Will Heal Our World. So the way this will work is that I'll introduce Sarah, and then she and I will spend about an hour in dialogue, and then I'll make some announcements, and we'll spend the last half hour or so taking your questions. So I expect we'll finish up in about 90 minutes or maybe even a little bit longer. Sarah Beek is a mystic, a poet, and a Harvard-trained scholar of comparative world religions. She's traveled the world studying spirituality, from whirling with Sufi dervishes to meeting with the Dalai Lama on her 21st birthday, from taking the host from a Croatian Catholic mystic who had the stigmata to having life-altering visions with shamans. And her writing is remarkable, bodacious, self-revealing, sexy, mystically transmissive. Her most recent book, Red Hot and Holy, A Heretic's Love Story, has been described as an American Gnostic gospel posing as a spiritual memoir. She's also written The Red Book, a deliciously unorthodox approach to igniting your divine spark. The New York Times called her one of the new role models for her generation, and her work has been published in magazines ranging from People to the Dutch Glamour to Skirt to Washington Woman. Sarah first got my attention because her playful, seductive, poetic voice spoke directly to her peers, the millennial generation, in a way that touched and outed the spiritual impulses that are normally hidden from my view behind the apparently irreverent, deconstructive tone and sensibilities of whatever. But that's really just the first layer. As I read her really remarkable recent book, Red Hot and Holy, I decided I wanted to invite her onto this series because I really think she has something important to say about our sacred relationship to our soul nature. Her personal story, really many stories, are vivid and compelling. But I think she can express the essence of this in a way that is not just her own story. It'll help many others of us open the door to an invigoration of our own sacred relationship to our souls, perhaps unleashing the evolutionary heroism in our hearts. Her voice at first may seem almost shy, but don't underestimate her. She really packs a wallop. So welcome, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that really lovely introduction.
Well, great. You know, as we start out, Sarah, is there anything that you'd like to say to introduce yourself to anybody there who, you know, joining us who doesn't already know you?
No, not really. I think what you did a wonderful job, and throughout the conversation, more aspects of who I am will just naturally show up.
Okay. Well, let's dive right in then to the meat of things. We're talking about one's divine soul. And those are words that you've used. Can you tell us what you understand about what that is?
Sure. With everything today, I can only speak from my own experience, although I am aware of external and helpful definitions for the soul that are given to us from wonderful people like Marion Woodman and Bill Plotkin and a host of others. But for me, the relationship with the soul and what I call the soul is it's really become the fundamental practice of my life. And my experience of the soul is that it really is this aspect of our distinct divine being that incarnates over and over again, or in my case, and probably several others, tries to incarnate over and over again. And it has a host of experiences and expressions in this universe. And so the fact that most of us don't have a close enough conscious relationship with this distinct divine aspect of our own being is so prevalent, is something that I'm just utterly fascinated with. First of all, because that was my own experience. I had definitely lost my soul. But then since I've found it again and I'm in that sort of messy, awkward, but really honest and beautiful process of incarnating my own soul, I'm, of course, just really attracted to and magnetized towards this happening with other people, why it happens and why it doesn't happen. So that's really the sweet spot for me.
Okay, beautiful. Now, what I understand about this soul nature is that it's really something that we plunge into the depths to connect with. It's not even though it is divine, there is a spiritual life that I open to by kind of waking up, expanding, ascending, opening into the light. And that is not negated by the emphasis on soul work. That's validated. That's a valid dimension of spiritual experience. But often in that approach to spiritual life, we only go up. And this soul work is about a plunge into the alchemical depths of our psyche and our being and our synchronicities with nature and with our incarnate uniqueness. And so I understand this journey into deeper contact with self through things like shamanic journeys, and it's kind of a unique and mystical path for each of us. It's part of what helps maybe enables us to get in touch with our unique gifts. But I think you're talking about the soul not just in those terms, but also in terms of a real sacred being in our own, you know, that we can have a relationship to, an aspect of ourselves. And I think that it'll be very helpful if you can unpack these different ways of relating to the soul and what that's like in your experience and what you notice about how it appears for others.
Sure. And thank you for that. That was an excellent discernment between the two of these labels that are often used between spirit and soul. Spirit being the more transcendent and otherworldly and upperworldly experience of the ascent, where we have that awareness that we are connected and we are one with everything, and spirit has more of a unifying quality to it. Where soul, in these more classical definitions, like by Plotkin and Woodman and others, it is more of this downward plunge into the depths of who we are that definitely involves intense shadow work and psyche work, and it's slower, it's muddier, it growls, it's bloody, it doesn't have a very light and fast essence around it. And so it's not a journey that is often encouraged or really understood by many traditions and just many of us. And I think Carl Jung, who really was one of the specialists on the soul journey, he became incredibly aware that soul loss is a modern epidemic. But when I began to have the experience of really understanding how I lost my own soul, which happened when I met Marion Woodman, this Jungian analyst, and was interviewing her, and it was a very transmissive experience of just sitting next to another woman and body to body, just understanding that this woman had something that I didn't, and it was hers. It was distinctly hers. It wasn't that I was supposed to have what she had, but that experience of fully having herself in her own body, of cradling her own being in her hips, of being able to speak from this place that was so based on her own experience and not just from ideas and concepts or other people's experiences. It was a sort of authentic power that I had not come across in my vast studies and, you know, being around several different, many different teachers and wise ones. And it hit me right in the gut that this was the first person I had ever been in front of that had actually embodied their soul. And the differences between us were enormous because I obviously hadn't. And so this led into a real, I call it a red night of the soul for me. But it plunged me into all of those things I just mentioned that you so beautifully outlined about why I had been focused so much on spirit and was really, you know, like a spirit addict and all the aspects of spiritual bypassing that I was definitely could get like a PhD in. Like they were very active and alive in me. And so these more classical definitions of the soul of needing to go down and become embodied and learning to really transmit all these incredible ideas and concepts that I've been studying my whole life into my lived experience was very much a part of my journey. But then it kind of got deeper than that for me. And maybe that's not the right word, but it opened into a much more vast experience of an actual cosmic being, an actual distinct divine being that is me, and that part of that distinct divine being is the soul. And so I needed the soul to make that bridge to my own distinct divine being, and from that actually also make that holy hookup to the actual divine, to the actual universe, to you, to plants, to everything. And that by bypassing this soul, bypassing my own distinction on many different levels. So I'm also speaking from a multidimensional perspective, not just the embodiment process, but also some layers deeper into that. I was actually missing out on a huge, huge way of being alive here and an intimacy that could only happen by embodying my soul. So I see the soul as sort of this bridge and really like the missing link to everything else. And it does involve all those things like, you know, dream work and art and really paying attention to nature and signs and synchronicities and somatic exercises and dancing and, you know, all those good, soulful, juicy things. That is very necessary and definitely things that aren't always as encouraged in classical religious or spiritual practice. But then for me, it definitely steps into even more sacred and distinct territory. And that's where everything began to get really dismantled for me. My previous ideas of what the divine was, my previous concepts of who I thought I was in the universe, all of that began to go through a major shakedown as I began to allow my soul to really show me who I was and what I was made of. And that's it. That required me letting go of almost everything I had ever learned before about the soul and about the divine and about the human experience.
Wow. Now, what I'm hearing and what you're saying, Sarah, is provocative for me in a couple of different ways. It does feel to me that you're saying, you're offering and encouraging us to open to the possibility of a profound, transformative, passionate love affair with our own divine nature in a way that a level of contact with a dimension of ourselves that is transcendent, initiatory, potent, and that really needs to be held very, very sacredly if it is even be real. That to the degree that we turn this into a concept or an abstraction, to the degree that we effort and try to make it so rather than allow its actuality, you know, there are all kinds of ways we can dishonor the reality of what you're pointing to. And it may be that we need a foundation of at least a certain basic spiritual opening and a basic level of soul work, maybe we might call it more conventional soul work along the lines of the kind of thing that Bill Plotkin has written so much about, in order for this to begin to open up, but that you're actually talking about something new. Is that accurate?
Yes. I don't know if it's new. It feels really, really old to me. And my experience of really coming back into contact with my own soul, who I call my lady, because she's bigger. She is my soul, but she's even bigger. She is an actual, she is the Godhead or the Goddesshead of my own being. And that, there was, let me say this. She had been, you know, connecting with me since I was a little girl, and I don't think I'm unique in this, in that I felt a very precious and intimate, very personal presence, a divine presence with me since I was a child. Now, I was raised Catholic, so that was the lens and the perspective that I had at that time. So, you know, I threw myself into just, you know, the whole God thing, God language, and wanted desperately to be a priest because all I wanted to do was to draw closer to this presence that was very delightful and hilarious and real, and she loved to dance and to play and to really help me come back to life, essentially. But there was, you know, when I looked out into what was offered to me as religion or spirituality, I left the church when I was in sixth grade because I read a book about reincarnation and it just sort of blew my world open. And I really recognized that although I respected the Catholic Church, that I had to explore so much more. I needed to. And so it sent me on this, you know, vast journey of just like traveling, reading everything I could get my hands on, visiting any teacher I could, you know, trying every practice and studying rigorously in the academy different religious and mystical traditions. And the whole time, I would receive these, what I call, you know, divine winks, which were just these signs and synchronicities from my lady, and they would more often than not show up through the color of the energy of red. So I would be reading something, you know, about Rumi, for instance, and I would learn that Shams, you know, the Rumi's sort of partner, love partner, who really opened him up to his own mystical gifts, was said to have shown up wearing red. Or EQ, the Zen poet and mystic and iconoclastic monk, you know, he talked often about this red thread of passion and Mary Magdalene's red robes and the Whore of Babylon's red wine. And so throughout my studies, there was this this pulse that would bring me back to myself, that would remind me that there was something trying to get my attention, something that was trying to come more alive in me. And so I began to call this presence the Red Lady. And I'm saying all this only because mine has this particular quality and I gave it a name and it had this particular presence with me. But my sense is that every single one of us is being tapped continuously by our own distinct divine being. But what ended up happening for me is when I would try to match my own internal experience with an external respected tradition or theology or cosmology or metaphysic or practice, more often than not, I was coming up empty-handed. I could not find the accurate reflection of my own experience in an outside experience. And it made me feel, you know, incredibly isolated, alone. It made me assume I was just a narcissistic, individualistic, egocentric, you know, white Western woman who was just, you know, off track. And so I really doubted the hell out of myself for most of my life, and I doubted my lady because I couldn't find our relationship always. I couldn't see it reflected outside of me. So it took me actually pulling away from the world and really going through this sort of divine dismantlement where I had to release regularly all these beliefs and paradigms and practices and traditions that I had absorbed in my system from my vast years of exploration, and to allow allow her to show me who she was, free and kind of unfettered from me trying to put her into something outside of me. So the process was incredibly rigorous and incredibly humbling and terrifying and very strange. You know, that there, it was very strange. And yet, and I'm definitely not, you know, I'm still in the midst of that process, but I would say that the climax is when I finally actually understood on a cellular level that this thing I had been calling the Red Lady, this beautiful divine presence that I didn't understand who she was actually my own distinct divine being who had been reaching through any medium possible in my life to get my attention. Because not only was I having this, you know, this ache, this heartache for something that was not just the divine of this universe and not just other people, but also my own essential nature, but that my distinct divine being was also aching for me. So the relationship was really reciprocal. And like any intimate relationship, because it's been so shoved, you know, outside of my own knowing and my own experience and really hidden from me, I had to do the work, a ton of work, to come back into trusting this experience of my own distinct divine being. So it was like any intimate relationship. At the beginning, I feel like she was really courting me and flirting with me, you know, through signs and my studies and love songs on the radio and kind of lighting me up like the beginning of a relationship. And then when I went and I pulled back away from the world for about 3.5 years and really went into what I call the red tent, which was a spiritual and physical cocoon, that's when she really like rolled up her sleeves and she was like, all right, now we're going into intimate relationship. Now, like, your ass is going to get grilled a bit because everything that you have put in the way of knowing and being and loving your true divinity has to come up now because it's separating us. So I had to really focus on she and I and what this was and go through kind of the crucible of that and really waking up to not just the beauty and the delight of, oh, this is actually who I am, but also the horror of how I've treated my own holiness throughout my life by really dismissing and ignoring her, and because she didn't match an outside tradition, I'm really, you know, tossing her to the cosmic curb. Like, all those things that I had done to my own being, I had to face and feel. And it's still, you know, I'm still in process with it, for sure. But it's a very, who she is and how she came into this universe and how she really like sees everyone and everything else in this universe is not something that I hear very often from other traditions. So it has been very strange. So, and I don't say, you know, I'm really careful. I'm not interested in saying this is everybody else's truth, but the profound shift in my own body being and heart because of this intimacy now, because of knowing who this is that I am in contact with and who is so personally invested in me knowing her, knowing myself, and being her, being myself, and being willing to share my truth, even if it contradicts other things out there, you know, is the greatest act of love that I can actually practice right now. And through it, and I'm sorry I'm going on, I'll stop after this, but just through this reunion with my own distinct divine being in this sort of classical way, you know, people can say you can know yourself and therefore you can know others, you can love yourself and therefore then you can really love others. I see that happening not just on a human level, but also on like a cosmic and divine level, where because that part of me is aligned now and I'm filled with my own essence, and I'm not perfect at it, but that hole has been filled, I am so much more capable at truly knowing and loving another and knowing and loving this planet and knowing and loving the divine. I actually didn't have the capacity for doing it until I was myself again, and myself with a capital S again. And so it naturally, even though we have to go really inside and spend a lot of time kind of focusing on reconnecting with this distinct divine essence of our own being, once we start, that hookup has happened, And it's an ongoing process. I expect I'll be in the process of incarnating for the rest of my life. But once the hookup actually is there, what I've noticed is just that it's a very gentle, organic flowering will naturally, I am being pushed now to be of service to others and to this planet in a way that I could not have done without this holy hookup. I wasn't equipped to do. So I'm sorry, I just went on for a while, but that was...
Yeah, no, that was...
That's sort of the outline of it.
Yeah, that was beautiful. And I'm struck by the implicit invitation that this represents to all of us as practitioners, that there may be an esoteric and very private possibility in people's spiritual life, that even those of us who have really devoted ourselves to practice but who have oriented ourselves in response to teachers and teachings outside ourselves, you know, that we may have been running roughshod over something that is only possible for us to encounter through our inner life and through our trusting of relationship to an aspect of our own being that may be much richer. And that this may be a clue to many people, that your example, your story, and your declaration about this may be a pointer to maybe even a very necessary process. That, you know, I do point to the world crisis. I point to the tremendous ferment of this time and the way in which the world needs us and which evolution needs us. And it may be that for us to heal our world, to be the force of health and sanity and awakening that we need to be, we need to open into and access the power that can come from this deep divine relationship. So I'm wondering, you know, because you are you've written through memoir and you've talked so much about your own personal experience, which is beautiful and I think often really instructive, how much does this transfer? You know, for instance, is this an experience that can happen similarly for men or differently for people of different ages? Or, you know, to what degree does and doesn't your story provide an accurate metaphor for others' journeys?
Well, on one level, it's really simple, where even if people have a very different experience than mine and, you know, my particular journey, I feel like the essence of what my book or my kind of ever-evolving message is to trust yourself. And this sounds so cliche and basic, but what I have noticed about what I would consider more of a soul and a distinct divine being path is that it's incredibly simple, and as we all know, you know, simple does not mean easy, but it's a very organic experience of actually really being yourself here on planet Earth. And so for instance, when I began to really understand that this thing that I had been projecting outward, so I've been, you know, like most of us, projecting my own divinity outside of myself, onto traditions, onto mystics, onto teachers, and et cetera, and then really going through a process of beginning to retract those projections and also beginning to understand that a lot of what I was projecting was just an aspect of my own divine nature, part of the sadness and the grief around it was that I knew this. Like, I knew from when I was a little girl what felt in alignment with my own divinity, with my own humanity, with my own nature. I knew it. And over the years, I would go to different spiritual practices or different teachers. I would read certain books. And that part of me was still alive and kicking and still kind of saying, like, well, this is beautiful. It's actually not in alignment with your particular soul path. Or this is actually a little too complicated and complex for just the majesty and the nobility of what's trying to happen really organically through you. Like, I, my system and my body and my flesh and my organs, like, they knew it. And the more I share my own experience, I've noticed a huge response from people being like, I've known this too. I've just felt like the minority, or I've felt like I must be wrong, or like those things I was saying before, I must just be this narcissistic, egocentric, blah, 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 blah. So we have all of these ways, these really kind of fascinating ways in which we shut down our own soul body knowing, and that we begin to divorce ourselves from our own divinity. And it happens in some way uniquely for each of us, kind of depending on our psyche and our patterning and et cetera. But it's also a real common thread that I see all around. And in fact, when I do, you know, give retreats, and this is the part that fascinates me, it's like we've been trained out of ourselves. So I'll be sitting with a woman and she'll be like, so then my soul can help me find, for instance, the next shaman I'm supposed to be working with, or it will help link me up with my spirit guide, or it will lead me to the right practice. And yeah, you know, your soul might, if that's in alignment with your soul. But what fascinates me is that people, or all of us, myself included, tend to think that our soul is not as majestic as it is, that we still have to go outside. We still have to get information from someone or something else. And while, of course, external reflection is always appropriate and necessary at certain times, how often we abandon our own being is fascinating to me. And particularly with, you know, people who have been on a spiritual or self-growth path, I'm just always amazed at how we do not know actually the felt experience of our own being. We might be able to talk about soul. We might understand, you know, what can help us get more connected to our souls through different practices and dancing, et cetera. But to actually have the lived experience of what it feels like to be only occupied by our own being and not all these paradigms and beliefs and teachers that we have sort of filled in our own space with is interesting to me. And that's where I do see that all around me. And, you know, one of the side effects, and I think this is really common for any of us who have been through a really intense experience, we can notice it more easily when it is happening or trying to happen for someone else. It just is, it's something, or, you know, our skin prickles with awareness, like where we can see that this is going on. And for me, kind of one of the side effects of coming to know my own being is that I tend to see or sense other people's beings like hanging out around them. And I can sense, if I pay attention to their being is trying to point me, to point them at all these things that are in the way for this intimacy to happen. And so I can't say this is something that I'm like, this is the truth. We've all been divorced from our distinct divine beings, and I'm on this, you know, mission to heal that. I don't feel it's that sort of like grand for me, but in a very simple way, I can't help but see that now. And I'm very aware that that's my lens. You know, I'm very aware that this comes from my own experience. And I also know when I am allowed, when I am given permission by When I'm allowed to see another person's distinct divine being, it is the most natural and glorious and honest and just beautiful experience. And I can't help but want that human to remember that about themselves and to rehook up with that awareness. And they might in different, you know, different points in their life, but to really have that relationship, because it's not just a state of being or a state of awareness. It's an actual relationship. And that relationship for me leads to everything else, because it is our own soul, it is our own being that knows better than any teacher, any psychic, any tradition, any practice, any technique, who we are, what we've been through on our vast cosmic journey, what we're up to, what we are trying to learn and experience and express in this particular lifetime. And it has such a, and I keep using this word, but it has a much more organic evolutionary feel, where it's not allowing us to take something from the outside and sort of prescribe it to our own being, but where we're allowing our own being to prescribe our life. And it's a very inside-out experience. And it just feels natural. Like for me, part of the Red 10 experience of actually pulling away from all my spiritual practices and studies and experts and all those things, like pulling away from that, it was like clearing out all this space so this like just simple rose could actually just do its thing, could just grow. And it was actually faster. It was actually unbelievably elegant. It's like when you look at a flower blooming, like which petal chooses to open at what particular time. If you ever watch that time-lapse photography of flowers, it's the same thing. And it's like our soul knows how we bloom better than anyone or anything else. And if it needs something or someone else to help reflect this inner knowing, it will naturally bring them in. It won't come from us sort of reaching out because we're trying to become more enlightened or become more mindful or become more something. It's actually like a real natural reception that starts happening. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I do see that this self-abandonment and the soul abandonment is dominant. If I'm just honest and I just look across, I do sort of an energetic swipe, both from my lady's eyes, and I kind of like look around this planet as I focus, and I look especially at sort of those of us on a spiritual path. I find this sort of dominates. And I wasn't alone on it, you know, just in a classical way, like we've talked about, like with Plotkin and others. I mean, they definitely would be saying, you know, their version of soul, like without a doubt, is not getting the cred that it should in the spiritual arena. But then if you're looking at it also from me and my lady's perspective, that definitely has not been given a tremendous amount of room to flower.
Yes, and I'm touched by what you're saying. By the way, Sarah, I want you to know we've discovered that there was quite a bit of echo whenever I talked. I think I'm echoing through your headset, maybe. So I'm muting you when I speak, and then unmuting you so you can reply. So there's a little extra clunkiness here that I just want you to understand. I'm interested to hear you talk about the 'cause when you said that you were so profoundly moved by your conversation with Marianne Woodman, you basically said this was the first time that you'd encounter somebody who was really fully incarnate as their own soul nature. So that would imply that the fullness of this relationship to one's own soul nature is not very common, that it's kind of a profound and uncommon realization. And if that's the case, then most of us will be beginners in the path, and there may be particular things that we can do or things that we need to stop doing, practices or unpractices, that can enable us to begin to deepen into something that only fairly rarely becomes as full as it can. So I'm curious as to what you could say in terms of practical advice to everyone.
Well, if there's anything, you know, that I've said or someone else has said that's talking about this that resonates on a real heart and body level, I always suggest making a really honest, heartfelt invitation to your soul to become more present and active and alive in your consciousness and your body and your life, and to really ask your soul to turn up its volume, because you want to check this out. You want to see if this reality is in alignment with you. And what I sense, and again, I know this is from my own lens and experience, is that every single one of us has this heartache. In certain mystical traditions, it's been for, you know, the beloved, like for the divine. And my sense is not even, and I know this is sort of, just bear with me, but not even what I would consider, you know, God / goddess, this universe, source, the divine, whatever label we have for it, not even that can fill this heartache. And this is like a soul ache, a being ache. Like, this is a deep ache. This is a multidimensional ache. The only thing that can fill that is our own being, and is that part that we have, you know, purposefully separated from, and now we are trying to reconnect with. And so I see that ache driving all of us through everything on a basic level, through our relationships, you know, through our addictions, through our choice and career, through very much through what we choose to study spiritually and who we choose to follow and who we choose to learn from. But until that space in us is filled with our own belovedness, that ache will continue to drive us, not just through this lifetime, not just in body, but even out of body. Like, this is a persistent ache. And so, to me, once this invitation is extended to start to incarnate, to want to know our own soul, to want to have a more intimate relationship with it and begin the embodiment process on a more conscious level, that starts to fill this up. Now, what for me, why this is always a little tricky is because the soul journey, I'm not trying to make it all relative. I'm not trying to just say, oh, it's so different for each person, but it really, really is when you look at it on a soul level. Because what each of our souls has been through, although we all share universal themes of suffering and joy and love, we all share those themes and those archetypes. But just like a human being has been through a very particular childhood and has a very particular parents and siblings and, you know, a first grade teacher, it's the same thing on that soul level. Each soul's incarnation has been very particular. So the only way to start going into that process and going into that intimacy is through the soul. That's the focus for me, is creating that relationship. And so it's as simple on one hand as extending that invitation. And for me, that usually has to happen definitely on a daily basis. The actual, like, conscious, like, I'm inviting my soul to take up more space in my life right now, even though I might not even understand what the hell that means, even though I don't even exactly know what soul means. I'm just going to invite this to show me what it is, and then I start paying attention. And in my experience, our souls are very present, and when they hear, they kind of have this permission to step forward and to start showing themselves more and therefore start revealing our own nature more. They grab it. They're like, let's ride. And so you will start to see things in your dreams, signs and synchronicities. You will start to just notice different feelings in your bodies that are becoming a little bit more heightened. And just paying attention to what this is and journaling about it, just taking notes, just honoring the fact that something is trying to press more into your reality is really how it begins and what it takes, and it's a continual daily practice. So in some ways, it is as simple as just extend this invitation, but the one thing I will say about it, and this is what I've learned about souls, I think it can work like this, but I would say that if it's just coming from a place that's like, oh, because I think I need to know my soul because I'll be more healthy, or if I learn to add the soul into my life, then I'll be balanced with the spirit and the soul, or I'll be more like that person, or Marianne Woodman. It's not always as effective. What I've noticed is that if you take the time, like 5 minutes, to sit down and actually just feel into your heart and become aware of that ache, that thing that keeps you constantly reaching outwards for something. That ache is the place that you extend the invitation from. And for most of us, we do have to go through a sort of beat down to actually get that serious and to get that real and to be like, really? It's really, this is it. I get it now that everything else is kind of like a show that's pointing me in this direction of my own soul. And so if I don't make the soul a priority, if I don't make my own distinct divinity a priority, I can't truly know all these other things I've been seeking, all these other things I've been looking for, be it a relationship, be it enlightenment, be it et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, like any relationship, if you're getting to know, like, a new human, you probably start off pretty respectfully, and you invite it out for tea. You invite your soul to go on a walk with you. You invite your soul into your dreams, and you begin to treat it with respect, and then it starts to show up. I mean, the reality is the soul has been showing up all over our life to really become, like, conscious of and to actually really return its favor, to actually turn in our own direction and bow. And for me, it took really, you know, knees on the ground, face in the mud to get this. And I think it hits all of us at different points, but it can start as easily as today. I was just saying I want to know myself more.
Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful and I think really useful. I'm sure that many of the people listening to us right now are really connecting with this message in a more direct and deep, in a deep way. Now, I want to invite you to thread that connection a bit further forward. One of the things that my soul has for a long time been urging me to do, it's why I've created this series in a way, is this sense that I've been called to point to, you know, here we are awakening as never before, evolution becoming self-aware as never before, all the world's spiritual traditions in conversation, the deep soul work of the native indigenous traditions all over the world and depth psychology, all of it in conversation with a level of intelligence and rigor and intensity available, a kind of spiritual awakening happening, and at the same time, all kinds of crises subsuming the natural world through global warming and habitat devastation and mass extinctions, and also these crises in all our human institutions, you know, educational and political and agricultural and financial and economic, and all of that being one thing, it's a very pregnant moment. And here we are awakening, and somehow our awakening has something to do with our mutual healing. And there is a kind of co-creative opportunity and possibility and even responsibility that we have. And there's something about healing our world and being a force of the healing that I think many of us feel called to at a level that's very deep and very intimate, much like the way that you're describing this soul connection. So if in fact this soul, this partnering with our divine soul, is the only way we can heal our world, can you maybe describe in more detail how this very intimate and very private and apparently mainly subjective process becomes the enlivenment of us so that we're moving into connection with others in the world and into action in a way that makes a broader difference?
Yeah, great, great question. I think, you know, Martin Luther King and Gandhi and, you know, they called it soul force. And they were really on that resonates really true with me and so many others based on her own experience, is that when this connection and this intimacy and this relationship starts to happen, and like I said, at first, often we have to pay more attention to sort of healing and looking at that relationship. But there is a point that starts naturally happening where once like that link has been made, there is a really natural influx of quite literally your own soul in your body. There is that direct connection, if we're looking at the soul as the bridge between the human and the divine, has been healed. It's aligned. And it's something that does need to be maintained on a daily basis, but it's there. And so just on a very, in my perspective, an energetic reality, you are actually able to hold and radiate much more life force and divinity than you can when this link is missing. And therefore, my experience of souls is that we are here in service, as service. Like, that is actually one of our most natural joys and expressions. And how we do that is through a variety of different factors. And yes, inherently, it lands in being ourselves here. But just speaking from my own experience, it's not just these words or these concepts anymore. Like, I can feel my very cellular nature. Now that this holy hookup has happened, she is like, all right, like, we're here now, like, and I'm going to continue to be being here, and I'm going to continue to incarnating this, and I am naturally reaching out to be of more service. And it is not coming from sort of a spiritualized ego, like mission-driven thing. It's not coming from just what I think I'm supposed to be doing in order to help serve this world. It's coming in from listening to such an intense point and to being so connected with my own divinity that I am sensing how my being is here of service in this universe. And she, my soul, being the direct link between me and all that is, also knows what this planet needs more than my own human ego does. It's just, she's, you know, the highest level of my being is still her own distinct essence, but she is also an integrated part of this entire universe. She's one with this universe, if we're using that language. And so when I have access to that, or I'm in alignment with that, I am actually being guided and moved to serve this planet in a way that is the most effective. And it's unfolding. And I've been in the red tent for 3.5 years, and I've only been stepping out of it, you know, the past few months, but I sense the difference so enormously. Before I went into the red tent, I had a successful women's spirituality career, and in many ways looked like I was being of service. And now I'm understanding that this is a whole new level of service, and what I'm going to be nudged to do feels much bigger. And I don't mean bigger in maybe a, you know, necessarily like a physical way. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I am convinced that I do not have the capability of serving this planet without my being. Like, I don't have it. I literally don't have the physical or energetic capability of doing it. So it's clear now to me that we have to be hand in hand and every day. And, you know, before this very interview, it's just me listening constantly, like, how am I best to be of service in this space, and I don't always consciously know, but I do know that she knows. And so that's, to me, that hookup, not only physically and energetically allows each of us to actually hold that much more knowing and power and ability to serve, but it's it helps to heal this planet in ways that we're not always conscious of. And it's direct. I mean, I don't want to just, like, leave this up to some, like, foo-foo way. Like, it's very direct, the acts of service. They are concrete. They are unique for each of us. But it's almost like I see it like pieces of a puzzle. It's like once we hook up with our own distinct divinity, it's like we all fill in exactly where we're supposed to be. It's like we move into position. And then things here start really working because we're all doing it together, fully hooked up.
That's very cool. That's beautiful. Thank you. And Sarah, I'm first of all, I resonate so much with what you're talking about. In a way, you're giving me some new words to describe aspects of what I have been verbalizing it as a deep alchemical process in my own being, in which I have had to listen to aspects of myself that sometimes don't even seem on the surface terribly divine, but which are the poles of my, maybe I could call it my divinely human nature, drawing me simply to account for the, even sometimes they might seem like the limitations or the peculiar qualities of my humanity as an aspect of this. And one of the things that I think it has pulled me toward is ever deeper contact with other people in a very intimate and soul level way. And I'm suspecting that at this place of deeper ensoulment, soul embodiment, whatever word we use, there's a possibility to make contact with one another, to touch and be touched, to be here, to be feeling another and to let another touch and affect us, that creates, like that, to some degree, to the degree that we haven't found our way into this soul nature, there's that there's a kind of loneliness for our soul, but loneliness for others too. It's in that ensoulment that we find our way into contact, into the possibility of deeper contact with others. Does that resonate for you?
So much. I think that's also the startling beauty of this relationship with the soul, you know, at least as I know it, is just how my lady refuses to allow me to throw away any aspect of my own humanity. My perspective is the soul just really wants us to embrace the full humanity because it can't be here without the human. And it actually really rejoices and relishes the experience of being human. And I know I'm not the only one in this where I have, by saying I haven't really enjoyed being human, there's been a lot of resistance to being human. And it's actually been my own being, my own divine being, that has taught me and continues to teach me to sink into the kind of glorious imperfection of my own humanity. And that any time I try to, like, shove something away or try to make something perfect or just, you know, embarrassed about, like, my you know, awkward voice or, you know, all these different things, I really feel her catching that thing that I've tried to toss out of my space or I've tried to hide out of embarrassment and bringing it back in to this embrace. And in doing that, it's created a real natural relaxation and blessedness that I understand more and more of humanity, and naturally, it just naturally makes you start to fall in love with the humanity of other people. It just, you begin, when you start to embody your soul, you begin to see yourself and others the way your soul sees. And you begin to hear things the way your soul hears and feel things the way your soul hears. And it's so human and it's so divine. And that idea in mystical Christianity, they call it anthropos, you know, the full human and the full divine, like that coming together of it and what that looks like. I don't really, know what it looks like. I think all of us are in that, awkward process of it. But I get more than I got before how the body and the human experience is really like the gateway for divinity. And I know we all know this now, but, all those things inside of us and outside of us that have taught us to or not, maybe not even directly taught us, but have possibly we've interpreted them to mean that we need to abandon our own body or, transcend something enough, or to make something go away or to all these things we have done to our own honest humanity. It's not helped us. It's actually not been the way home. And the more I'm in this process, I'm getting more and more like the body and the human experience is the gateway to the divine. And anytime I try to leave that, I am actually not as connected, even though some part of me might be floating off, being one with everything and like blissed out somewhere and having some really powerful experiences on some level. I'm actually not as connected to my own being and the divine itself, unless I'm holding myself all together, all aspects. And so I do see that. I see that reflected in so many different people too. Like what you so beautifully said, it's coming home to ourselves makes us just naturally recognize the home in other people, and it makes us naturally, want to touch that in other people and appreciate it and respect it. And yeah, it's just a natural extension. And I think that's why I'm so impressed with the soul path, is that it won't allow us to leave anything out. And then by turning us slowly inside out, it's just that extension for wanting to embrace another and for wanting to embrace this planet and for wanting to step up and speak out and to be of service. It comes, it's just so much more natural. It's like exhaling.
Well, that was beautiful, and I just kind of want to keep plunging ahead, but we've already gone over time, so I know people want to ask questions, so if you're listening by phone, you can raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your telephone keypad, and if you're listening online by your computer, you can just type a question into the Instant Teleseminar window. I'd like to make sure that you know how to find out more about Sarah's work. She's the author of the new book, Red Hot and Holy, A Heretic's Love Story, recently published by Sounds True. High praise for it from Jean Houston, Christiane Northrup, Jeffrey Kripal, Shiva Ray, for its laugh-out-loud humor, deep wisdom, and sheer energy. In January 2014, Sarah will start offering Soul Fire sessions over the phone or on Skype to help women and men reignite an intimate, dynamic, and radically real relationship with their soul. If you're interested, please email info@sarahbeek.com. That's info@sarabeek.com. And in July 2014, Sarah is going to be offering a 5-day soul fire retreat at the stunning Feathered Pipe Ranch in Montana, where women will have the sacred space to sink deeply into Mama Nature, their self, and the beloved. For more information about Sarah and her work, please check out sarabeek.com, sarabeek.com. And I want you to be aware of my work. Even if you're on the mailing list for Beyond Awakening, you're not necessarily on my personal mailing list at Terry Patten, TerryPatten.com. I invite you to go there. You can read my blog, find out more about upcoming events that I'm teaching, and also about working with me individually. I just completed a really amazing event that I co-facilitated with Jeff Salzman and Diane Musho Hamilton called the Integral Living Room. Those of you who are moved by the level of discourse going on here can find a way to really experience some of this in a more powerful way in some of my other offerings. And there's something coming up very soon, tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. I'm going to be offering a free online seminar called The 5 Spiritual Myths That Sabotage Your Conscious Evolution. It's something you can sign up for if you go to the website ISP, like Integral Spiritual Practice, ISPseminar.com, ISPseminar.com. After 40 years of engagement with the deep questions of spiritual life, 15 years in an ashram, more years in the real world, I've distilled the insights I'm going to be sharing in this free teleseminar. Each of these myths is actually rooted in a deep spiritual truth, but they're easily distorted and it makes them seductive in some of the very ways that Sarah has been speaking to in this interview. And like her, I myself have fallen prey to each of these myths many times in my own life and practice, which is why I've now devoted more than a decade of my life to helping hundreds and thousands of people to thread the needle so that their practice can be free of these subtle but insidious distortions. So on Monday, I think this will speak to liberating you from subtle errors that can create struggle where it's unnecessary and open doors that can make a huge difference. Many people from around the world have talked about how powerfully this has enabled people to breathe more deeply, move with balance, think freer, and just really drop into their total divine humanity. So I'm grateful, and you can tune into this. You can register by going to ispseminar.com. Okay, let's take a look at what questions have come in. Well, there are quite a few that have come in on the instant teleseminar window. You know, Sarah, because there are quite a few questions, it might be fruitful for us to try to answer them relatively briefly so we can cover more of them. Here's one from an old friend of mine, Susan Campbell in Sebastopol, California. She asks, how can you distinguish the inner guidance from your soul from those that are motivated by the ego mind? And let's see, would we need to unmute you, Sarah? I guess so. Pardon me.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. No, that's an excellent question, and it's I would say, without a doubt, it's an ongoing practice. And the practice starts with just becoming really familiar with the different voices we all host inside of us and the common somatic feelings that are connected to those voices. And I know for me, it took a while to begin to differentiate. And I used to do it even just, you know, through journaling. Like there would be a particular insight or, you know, feeling or voice I would hear, and I would journal about it, and I would just sort of notice what was happening in my body and where it felt like it was actually coming from. And over time, I began to distinguish, like, gosh, when that voice pops up, even though it sounds very spiritual, there's a contraction going on in my heart. And I can actually feel it coming from kind of like the upper right part of my head or something. You know, I can feel that it has this kind of familiar quality of wanting me to achieve something or wanting me to be really spiritual or wanting me to, you know, go in this particular direction because it's more exciting or it's more distracting. So it's just about taking the time to become really familiar with all the different aspects of ourselves. And like I said, that takes time and practice. And for me, it takes journaling. Also, though, by deepening this connection with your soul, it's not always like a voice you're hearing. I think for some people that are more clairaudient or something, that happens to be a good direct route. But for a lot of us, the soul spreads itself like melted butter across skin. It spreads all over our life. And so becoming aware of just that feeling, I know when I'm walking down the street and something shows up and it has this poignancy and this resonance in my own body, and I know it's a direct wink from my own soul to me, there is an undeniable sort of a, you know, heightened experience in my body that feels very natural and grounded, but very much opens up my heart and actually pushes my own essence into my cells. And I become more alive. Like I just, all of a sudden, I'm like, whoop, I'm here. And that to me begins to indicate that it's more of my soul voice. Even when I'm being taught something that is especially grueling and hard, there is still a motion within my own being that feels very natural. It doesn't feel like it's an external voice coming in or something my ego has latched onto. It feels like something that is coming very naturally out of my own system. So it takes practice. There's no easy answer for that. But all of us sort of dedicated to this inner inquiry are familiar with this practice of just being able to notice.
I'm going to take one more question from the folks who've typed in, which is very a lot of people are really quite moved by this conversation, Sarah. I just want to let you know there are a lot of messages of appreciation and thanks and even tears, really beautiful. One question that strikes me particularly is from Michael in Vancouver, who says that he resonates a lot with what you say. When he looks within himself, he finds two strong voices guiding him, one masculine and one feminine. And he's asking, is it possible to have two souls, or do you think these two parts are aspects of one soul?
Wow. That's a good one. I'm just sort of looking at it. It actually, just from my soul's perspective for Michael, it actually looks like it's two parts of your own soul. And this is just from my perspective. So the fact that you offered that as a possibility just means to me that you already, you know that. But it's something to continually inquire about and see. But just sort of the image like your soul is giving me is just like almost like this exquisite the shape of it is like a teardrop shape, and in it, it's like I'm seeing both the masculine and the feminine aspect of you in that shape, acting, you know, as one, even though they're speaking in two different voices. So that must be a very, you know, particular part of you that is asking to be known in that way. But it's really moving to see. And again, this is just my perspective, so if it doesn't resonate, check it. But it's something that I do think is possible and I do see is possible. And just to continue relating in that way with it, because it's really beautiful.
Well, let me take a live question here. A couple of people have raised their hands, and I can see the names that are maybe the names that your phone line is listed under. It might not be you. The first person I'm calling on here is Maura Collins in Escondido, California. At least the phone is. Welcome.
I wonder if that's my phone.
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. This is Lauren Palmer. I'm calling you from a Google number. I am actually in Boston. Sarah, I just feel like I've just met Vajrayogini. I don't know if you're familiar with this red dancer, sky dancer, but it's a Tibetan deity, a preliminary deity that one works with. And she's been my divine self for many, many years. So I don't know if you're familiar with her or not.
Yes, I am.
Good. I feel like you are Vajrayogini. Now, I just want to ask you that in the practices that you use during your teaching and retreats, do you use any form of individual meditation?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Do you use techniques such as intersubjective that create a we space with another person? That is, you're using interactions like eye gazing or that sort of thing?
I forgive me, I'm not as familiar with the terminology that you use. I kind of got wiped clean a little bit in the red tent, but what I can share with you is that in the retreats, or when I'm working one-on-one with someone, the closest thing that I've been able to find in an external tradition or external practice name is the nous, which is a name that is used in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene also actually as a space between the body and the soul. And it's accessed through what I know of as the heart of the heart. It's not the heart chakra. It's actually more like what I see or what I experience as more of the kind of like the portal inside ourselves to our distinct divinity. And so it feels like the heart of the heart. Anyway, that's the individual meditation, and I only really share one, and it's really allowing people to just remember that heart of heart and actually just feel into it and then invite their distinct essence to start to come forth more in their body and in their consciousness. And it's a particular meditation, but it's just very natural. It really respects the individual psyche and the individual placement and unfolding that each being is on. And in that space, if it is something that feels needed, that's usually when the being of the person will sort of wave at me if they want more direct connection with the human. If there's something that's sort of in the way of the distinct divine being and the human personality having a more a direct connection, they'll sort of point it out, like there's a little smudge over here, or there's a teacher that, as wonderful as that teacher is, it's actually needs to just be moved outside of the being space so this connection can happen. So I find that particular meditation is really the part of the invitation I was talking about earlier. When you're in that Holy Heart space, and that's when you extend the invitation for your own being to incarnate more and to become more present in your awareness. And for me, that's where the magic starts. And also from my soul's perspective, that's the most organic way for this to happen. So there's no other kind of techniques that I know of for me that have come in to be used yet. I'm open to that happening in the future, but right now it just is keeping it really simple.
Thank you. Are the results been palpable?
Very much so, because in my experience, there's nothing like feeling yourself for the first time. And right. Most of us haven't felt ourselves for lifetimes.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. May your teachings and spirit flood the universe.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Let's take a couple more questions from the computer, and I'm going to compose a question here. It seems to me that a number of the folks who are asking questions are speaking. There are tears. There's a sense of recognition for many people who are really. One person identifies himself as reaching 82 in December 2020. December next month, and feeling like you're reflecting back to him his own innocence and his heart being penetrated with tears of joy. And another woman who's practiced Buddhist practices for a long time in emptiness but has yearned for something juicy and warm and human. And out of that come into Native American and animal totems, and this suggests to me that it may be that this soul journey is that there's something particularly evocative about you being so deeply given over to this and pointing and speaking to this so powerfully as a young woman, that is catalytic for people who are older than you. And I'm wondering if in your process of visiting this and engaging with this, you know, for instance, Jung would talk about the depth of this individuation process only being possible once people got at least into their 50s or so. And there's something about you being both a representative of this type of depth practice and a representative of the younger generation that I think is striking a particular chord, particularly from some older listeners. And I wonder if your work with people leaves you with any, you know, particular insight into how this expresses itself at different life stages, or, you know, I just want to invite you to reflect on that.
From, you know, from my soul's perspective, like I mentioned in our dialogue, I'm speaking, you know, from my own heartache of what it's been like to not know my own distinct divine being. And I do feel like that heartache, even though people might have different languages for it and different experiences around it, is universal. And when I say universal, it feels, you know, bigger than even this planet. It feels universal. So I think anytime any of us speak from that place and what it's been like to start that journey home to ourselves, we all feel it. You know, no matter who we are, what we've been through. I know I do when other people are speaking, you know, about that, even if it's a journey that's different than mine and on sort of an external level, the internal level, from my lady's perspective, this is a journey we have all been on for a very, very, very long time. And so many of us are just sort of, you know, shaking the dust off our memories. And honestly, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like, you know, there's not some big bang cosmic, you know, shift. It's just been me allowing myself to remember who I am, why I'm here, where I came from. And this memory, and I think of it with like a capital M, is inside every single one of us. And at least in my case, so much of us, especially in terms of spirituality, our attention has been directed outward, and there's biological reasons for that. There's socio-political reasons. There's incredible reasons for it, you know, and it's been really well justified. But and even though we've had people tell us, you know, it's all within you, you know, like the kingdom, the queendom is within you, or, you know, even popular teachers today are saying, no, you have it all, the answer's inside of us. It's really remarkable the process I've found that it takes for each of us to really own that, to really begin to trust that. And I think it's something we crave more than almost anything else. So it's a craving, it's a longing, it's a familiarity that I just think is natural to the human condition, and there's many of us speaking about it in our own ways. So it doesn't feel like it has a particular age limit to it. I feel like, you know, we could go to a children's class, you know, and talk about this and they would nod, and we could go to, you know, any high school class, and even if they were a little jaded, I think there would be deep nods. And I think that's, they're, to me, they're just soul nods. You know, all of our souls are sort of just nodding at each other right now. Like, yeah, we've been through it. And it's time for many of us just to honestly remember it and to share.
Here's another question that feels very alive. Joy in New York City, who has read your book twice and absolutely loves it, is asking, have you ever felt like you were repeatedly asking your soul for guidance, for a deeper connection, for some sign that it hears you, and getting no answer for months? Do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, the no answer is usually the answer. It's part of what I've learned about the soul is it's definitely not just like an information giver. You know, it's something that it has, it's such a holistic orientation that if there is a part of us that might be actually, and this is paradoxical, but just like bear with me, growing too dependent on kind of waiting for signs or waiting for guidance from this thing called the soul. And if there is anything happening in that experience, which is actually bypassing our body or bypassing us trusting our own emotions or our own feelings or our own sense around it, like a physical human sense, then I've noticed that's when my soul will go quiet, if I'm doing that, for instance, in some way. And a lot of my experience with my own soul has been a slow build of stamina and trusting the unknown. For many years in the Red Tent, when I was really pulled back from everything and everyone and things were, you know, going, I was really shedding a lot. It was incredibly confusing and I did not have answers. And I had to act on something out of faith and out of a sense that I sense that this is in alignment with me. I don't have like a huge, you know, sign across the sky telling me this is the direction I'm supposed to be going in, or you definitely made the right choice, Sarah. And everything that came up around making a decision or a choice in my life, both the doubts and the real, you know, positive aspects that came up to support that choice, they all arose for a reason. So when I'm not hearing from my soul, I now know to trust it because there is some, when I'm thinking I'm not hearing from my soul, there usually is something that is trying to get activated in me. And I usually do know what I am supposed to be doing. I am just tentative to do it, or I'm scared to do it, or I'm waiting for an outside sign. And the soul is about getting us to trust our own nature and our own being and our own body as well. So it's a two-way relationship.
You know, Sarah, there's another question that relates to this.
Yeah.
Do you actually hear a voice separate from your own, or is it in your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Do others sometimes have the ability to hear the soul voice of another person?
Yeah. Yes, I think others do, but I think you have to be incredibly careful with that, incredibly, incredibly careful, because especially with people who have very natural psychic abilities, because just like that wonderful question that was asked at the beginning, like how do you know if it's your soul voice or your ego's voice, if we're going to extend it a little bit more cosmically, we also have to be asking, is this actually the voice of my own soul, or is it another spirit, or is it a guide, is it a archetype, is it, you know, a nefarious being, like acting as my soul, like there's, all those are very important questions and really imperative on the soul journey, and they all come through, again, practice. For me, my soul's voice feels very much like my own voice. In fact, the first time I actually, like, would say I heard my voice, I was in graduate school, and I remember the feeling of being like, oh, this is me. At the same time, there was this, oh, this is the divine. And it felt like I was, you know, scratching this itch that I've had since before I was born, like by expressing it finally. It felt like I was, since I had taken the time to actually clear some space for me to possibly even hear this, even though that particular night when I did, it wasn't even my intention to do so, there was such a natural release in my body. It didn't feel like something outside of me coming in. It didn't feel like it was coming from sort of upper parts of me. It felt very heart and belly related, and it felt like it was just like something, again, like exhaled out of me. And so I think for each of us, my soul, like my lady, is also, like, she has a dirty sense of humor. She is, like, there's many different sides to her because there's many different aspects of our own being. But there is a unification of presence that is as familiar as your own spine, as your own skin. And that is something I always suggest to look for and to be aware of. And if you're not aware of what that feels like, you start at the beginning. You know, you start at being like, I want to hear from my soul and only my soul. And for me, that took me cutting out everything else. And starting that also took like journaling and being like, you know what, I don't really know if that was my soul, or that kind of felt a little bit more like this. And it's a practice. And like I would say, it is ongoing for each of us. I still have to do inquiry all the time to make sure it is my soul and not just a shadow or a projection or an external being. But the more familiar you become with the way you feel, the you of you, the center of you actually feels, the more in you go, the less easily you are sort of duped by external forces or that you are as swayed by them, because you've just become so much more familiar with how you feel and how you sound.
Well, Sarah, I'm feeling torn right now because I feel deeply descended into this conversation and I only want to take it further. And I see that we're already after 11:30, so... I think we maybe need to transition here for me to give people an opportunity to, well, for one thing, we'll open up the line so we can all say goodbye. If you value what you're receiving here, please support our work by letting others know about it. You and they can register for the series at beyondawakeningseries.com. And if you're interested in learning more about Sarah and sessions she's going to be offering next month and the event next year and other things, go to sarahbeek.com. You're also invited to go to ispseminar.com, sign up for my free teleseminar, The Five Spiritual Myths That Sabotage Your Conscious Evolution. And thank you so much for joining Sarah and me today. I want to open up the lines. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was so
good.
That was wonderful, Sarah. God bless. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah.
Very moved and inspired. Thank you.
Thank you.
Big hug.
Thank you so much.
So long, Sarah. Thanks.
Thank you so much.